You're listening to the Riyabu podcast with Simon Littlewood and Mark Lowdy. Well, here's another fun story for you from the United Kingdom, Simon, and it concerns supermarkets.
Yeah.
If you're a supplier to supermarkets, chances are you're really in a much different situation than if you're a supplier to any other company, because the supermarkets are in essence renting shelf space to you and often get a very substantial reward for the for that privilege. But in the United Kingdom, the prompt payment code for the last couple of years, 6 years or so, has tried to make the playing field a lot more even for suppliers to supermarkets. The problem is not everybody signed up to it. In fact, only 6 of the 12 major supermarkets have. And so in this latest story that you can read on the Riyabu website, the question being asked is, why are they not signing up? But there is a twist. You would expect the companies, the supermarkets that are not signing up, to be worse in their payment terms. After all, they're not members of the code, they're not signatories, therefore they probably don't feel that level of obligation. But that's the funny thing, that actually the top paying supermarket chain in the UK is not a signatory, and the worst payers are. And so the question, I guess, the first and foremost is, tell us a little bit more about the supermarket model and what you're getting yourself into if you were to decide to supply to the supermarket.
Yes, I mean, the first thing is that the major supermarkets like Tesco have entirely built their growth on cash flow. That is, they pay their suppliers in 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, sometimes in 4 months. All their customers pay them in cash or something very close to cash. Even if you use a debit card, typically it's paid almost instantly or within a day. That difference means that the more their turnover, the more surplus cash they're generating, because they're always 2 months ahead of the game, right? And that has essentially funded massive growth for the major supermarket chains. Now,
and not just in the UK. That's the global phenomenon.
That is the model for what's called the modern trade. The modern trade is where you aggregate lots of different kinds of products into an enormous space, and because you're buying huge amounts from individual suppliers, i.e. you're buying far more than a traditional grocery store could ever buy, you negotiate the price very closely, and you extract very long payment terms from your suppliers. And, you know, and therein lies the success of the Tesco model.
Yeah? Yes, in South Africa, even there's certainly supermarkets that have, you know, they don't actually care all that much about the supermarket sales. What they make their money off is the fact that they keep such large amounts of cash in the balance sheet.
Yes, I think that what you've got to understand, of course, is that the dominance of companies like Tesco, and Tesco's had some very significant issues in the last few years. They've had to shut all their American shops and so on and so forth, and they've had a very unsuccessful and very unprofitable foray into China, so they've had some reversals, is that newcomers like Aldi, which is German, and other companies that are taking market share from them are a big threat, because their margins are even narrower and they run an even tighter ship, yeah? But traditionally, German businesses are much more disciplined about the way that they pay their suppliers. I know we agreed we wouldn't talk about culture and geography, but the fact is there is a cultural element in this, right?
I'm certain of it. Yeah, I'm not sure that that it is quite so open and shut that every German company will pay you.
Well, I think that, but where I was going with this is I think that if you're a newcomer and you're trying to get market share, you might see it as a competitive benefit to play ball with the government. In other words, you say, right, we're going to follow with this, whereas a traditional player that's under threat for market share might see the government attempt to control when you pay your suppliers as being a huge threat. Yeah? They have everything to lose, whereas Aldi has everything to gain, right? And Aldi has gained market share at a huge rate in the UK.
So as a supplier, you have to simply accept that model, right? So if you're going to supply to supermarkets, you're not going to be able to walk in and say, hey, I'm expecting payment between 14
unless
and
you have something
days.
You know, very unique, and almost nobody does. And I witnessed it years ago when I was working for a very large, huge company that was supplying Tesco. We had a series of humiliations when we tried to get them to pay quicker. I think there's something else because they had such scale that they were actually prepared to turn us off, although we were one of the biggest dairy suppliers in the UK. They said, okay.
We don't need you anymore.
No, we don't need you because, we had 30% of the market, but there was 70% of the market was in the hands of other suppliers, and they were prepared to go to them. So they're tough. Mm. You know, they're very tough.
They know their bargaining position.
They know their bargaining position, which is you know, one of the arguments, of course, against aggregation of market share, you know, which is you know, what people talk about, not just monopolies, but duopolies. And if you have a few people as you did, as you have done in the case of the modern trade mega supermarkets, controlling most of the market, because most people in the UK buy most of their groceries from large modern trade supermarkets. That gives them an advantage, and it puts suppliers at a huge disadvantage. I think there's another thing that we haven't talked about, and certainly this is my experience with Tesco, with Asda, with the big suppliers, is they are absolutely meticulous about the paperwork. So whereas in the past a supplier might have sold stuff to a grocery store and there might have been minor issues in the payment or the invoice or whatever it happened to be, you'd have dealt with that because it was a sort of gentlemanly kind of environment. The, yes. the way that a Tesco works, and I can recall this very well because I was a young manager in charge of getting Tesco to pay, was that they would look at every single invoice, and if it had the slightest thing wrong with it, one digit out of place, one penny wrong, they would simply reject the whole invoice. And what they did was they sent us every week an absolutely massive computer printout, which was a list of all the invoices that they weren't paying. And this list kept growing and growing and growing and growing and growing and growing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So not only are they paying you by agreement late or over a very long period, because they're saying, if you want our business, we're going to pay you in 9 months, not the 30 days that you used to. But by the way, we take administration extremely seriously. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a whole building in Cheshunt in Hertfordshire that essentially was full of people finding holes in supplier invoices.
Wow.
I mean, holes, you know, because it was so massively profitable. You think about if you can withhold payment from 20 or 30% of supplier invoices because you can find something wrong with them. Think of the cash flow advantage.
You're almost selling it to us that we should delay payment.
No, I'm not selling it to you that you should delay payment. I mean, but you can see that I don't know what the statistics are, but once you've got a certain degree of scale, 30% of invoices is 18 days worth of invoices based on 60 days. That's 18 days of sales, and you've collected all that money in cash. You've got 18 days of additional cash across your entire empire that you can then use. I don't know what 18 days sales are for Tesco, but they would be a huge amount of money.
Well, in fact, in our story, you can read details of the amount of money that,
yeah.
For example, their yearly revenue of more than £50 billion. So divide that by 365,
well,
and I guess
it's a billion pounds a week. So it's, you know, 2 weeks, it's 2 billion quid.
Yes.
That's in your pocket that you wouldn't otherwise have had simply by delaying invoices. How many new stores can you build from a billion quid?
Wow.
Quite a lot, yes?
Yes.
And that's the model. And then you build more stores and then you delay payment further and so on and so forth. That's why big mega stores like Tesco made out like bandits for decades. They're under a lot of pressure now because of competitive issues. And they're certainly going to take a very dim view of governments trying to interfere in this.
Yes, which I guess brings us full circle to the fact that the grocery suppliers' code of practice was even put into place. I can't imagine that they'd be very happy about that, which is probably explains the reason why only half of them have signed up for it, Simon. But to conclude then, the fact that, as you will read in our story, the fact that there are some supermarkets, such as Aldi, that do pay promptly that are outside of the code, and some of those that are in the code do not pay promptly. What does that say about the efficacy of any government interference, to use your word, any government attempts to try to regulate payments?
I'm very concerned about government attempts to regulate. This is very typical of what politicians do. You know, they observe an issue. It's a populist issue because it says, you know, the small guy, because the suppliers to a major supermarket are almost all going to be smaller in size than the supermarket itself.
Of course, yes.
It's a populist move, which says, you know, we're going to look after the small guy, but the fact is it interferes in the mechanisms of trade, which should be negotiated between people. The way to deal with the fact that supermarkets have too much power is to think about whether or not it's appropriate for people to have as much market share as they do. Those are the measures that should be used. It should be used, as should be used in any monopolistic situation, yeah? One, the government shouldn't get involved in it, and two, it's never going to work because these guys are experts at finding ways around this. And we talked about this.
Because, we have, yes.
Because when we write a credit policy, whatever we commit to in terms of how we pay a supplier, that is subject to their submitting to us an acceptable transaction. That is an invoice that meets all our criteria. And how difficult is it for us to create criteria that they can't meet? Or to change the criteria, or to get extra picky, or even accidentally on purpose to mislay the invoice.
All sorts of ways.
Well, there's all sorts of ways. You know,
you'll never make it 100% watertight, I guess.
And then you've got someone that's going to be policing this and fining people, and you know, all of that is a colossal waste of time and energy. What you should be doing is negotiating the best term with your supplier.
Your customer, you mean?
If we're taking the position of the supplier, yes, you have to decide whether. I mean, I think part of the issue is that. And we've talked about this many times, is that companies don't really understand the impact of balance sheet on their overall profitability. In other words, what's happening here is that I'm a supplier, and I've seen this. I've actually seen this. I'm a supplier, and Tesco come along and say, we're going to take 30% of your sales next year. We're going to give you this huge contract, which is probably 10 times bigger than anyone else that you've ever done business with. And you're thinking, whoa, you know? And then they say, and by the way, we're going to pay you in 90 days. And you think, well, whatever. What you haven't actually realized is that by not paying you in 90 days, as opposed to the 30 days that your little customers were paying you in, you are going to need a massive injection of additional working capital to keep your business going. If you understand that and you manage to that, which is what we've always said, right, then that's doable. But businesses don't. You know, there's something in the head of an entrepreneur that says, wow, if our sales are going to go up 30, 60, 90%, we're going to be rolling in the money. Well, we're not, actually. We'll have less money, okay? And we'll have to get money from outside. And as a result of that, you see suppliers in all kinds of cash flow difficulties. You see them subject to predatory purchases. So you see significant amalgamation in the supplier base. I mean, this has been one of the major impacts of the modern trade in the West, has been that suppliers have had to effectively gang up together, right, in order to achieve more leverage. Yeah.
Or join Riabu. And that's, of course, leads us to the end of this conversation and the encouragement for you to read the story online and, of course, join us in the conversation. Leave your comments, too, under this podcast, and we look forward to hearing your stories. If you have, in fact, supplied supermarkets and you have some stories to tell, why not just drop us a line?